Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. For most kids, a mid-November day like today is just another day at school, a day of teachers, classes, reading, writing, and math.
But that's not the case for 12-year-old Finn and his 9-year-old brother Rye. They live in northern Vermont and have never set foot in a classroom. Instead, their days consist of farm chores, making homemade bows, building shelters in the woods, basket weaving, tapping maple trees. And if the weather is particularly nasty, maybe they stay inside with a good book.
That's because Finn and Rye's parents are unschooling their children. It's a form of homeschooling with no curriculum, no tests, and very minimal desk work. Their father, Ben Hewitt, argues that this is about freedom, and that when his kids are free from classrooms, homework, and tests, they, quote, learn by living.
Ben Hewitt's new book about all this is called Homegrown: Adventures in Parenting Off the Beaten Path, Unschooling and Reconnecting with the Natural World. He'll be appearing tonight at Brookline Booksmith, and he joins us now. And Ben Hewitt, welcome to Radio Boston. Great to have you.
It's great to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
And I want to invite our listeners in on this conversation. Whether you're parents, students, homeschoolers, or unschoolers, we want to hear from you. What do you think of this idea of unschooling, which we're about to talk about in a moment? Do you love the idea of setting your kids free from the confines of a traditional classroom? Or do you think kids need curriculums, teachers, classmates, tests, and all the rest? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. So, Ben, let's start off with this term unschooling, which I know you express a little discomfort with.
Yeah, I think I'm becoming more uncomfortable with it by the day in some ways. And I guess my reason for that is I think it does a really good job of explaining what my children's education doesn't look like, but it doesn't do a very good job of explaining what it does look like. And so a term that I've recently been introduced to that I'm increasingly favoring is immersion learning, because really that's the point of what we're trying to do. It's, you know, immersing our children in their environment. And so through the course of that immersion, of course, that's how their learning happens on a day-in, day-out
right.
basis.
I mean, I guess unschooling is good in explaining that you're not doing it in a school.
Sure.
They're not to school. So what's a typical day for your two guys?
Well, our lives are really dictated in many ways by season because we live pretty close to the land. We have a small farm. A typical day for us really does depend on what time of year we're talking about. But this time of year, every day starts with chores. After chores, we will have breakfast as a family. And then this time of year, with the weather starting to become a little less cooperative, the boys will often spend, as much as a couple to a few hours reading. And then we will have lunch. Usually in the afternoon, there is some project, be it something that the kids are working on their own or with friends. We happen to live in a community with a fairly high population of home/unschoolers, so there are a lot of other children for them to work on projects with. They have a part-time job working at a local dairy farm, so often in the evening they'll go down and do evening chores, family dinner, family read time, and bed.
It sounds lovely, but I can imagine someone listening to this and sounds like a vacation in the country.
Yeah, I can understand how someone could think that, I guess. I have to say, we feel, we work really hard.
Yeah.
I say that because I really want to make that clear. Like, this is not about just sort of like shoving our kids out the door or giving them total autonomy over their days or letting them do whatever they want whenever they want.
Yeah.
So there is, we do work really hard, but a lot of it is of our own choosing. And so in that regard, I suppose it could sound a little bit like a vacation. That said, the kids have, I would say in some regards, many more responsibilities than a lot of contemporary schooled children in regards to, their duties around home and farm.
Sure. Well, when I read this, Ben, I'm a parent. I've got kids. They're in school, so I guess they're schooled. But, I admire you, and yet I also, when I think about taking something like this on myself, I'm sort of not horrified about what you did with your kids, but just horrified by the idea of taking on this responsibility,
mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering, you know, what do you say to me? I mean, what thought does that provoke in you when I say that?
Well, here, I mean, you're not exactly asking this question, but you're asking a version of this question, which is a lot of people say, like, you know, where do you get the confidence to do this?
I think that is what I'm asking.
And I think it's a really important question, and I guess I've often sort of puzzled that. I mean, I haven't always felt as confident as I do now. That confidence is sort of – my confidence has evolved over the years to the point where I do feel extremely confident, you know, A, that not only that we're doing the right thing by our children, but that B, that, you know, we're providing them with the tools they're going to need no matter which sort of path they choose in life, be that a more, you know, traditional career or a more sort of land-based existence like we have chosen. I think one of the reasons that we sort of culturally speaking lack that sort of confidence is that most of us as adults were sort of placed into a compulsory educational environment. Mm-hmm. And so that the only thing that we can imagine ourselves is that a child's education, you know, must sort of be this hierarchical thing that is sort of taught to them. It's very difficult for us to get out of that frame of mind where we can actually imagine that, hey, you know what? Children learn. And that in some ways, it's, you know, the best way to stop them from learning is to force them to try and force them to learn.
Well, this, of course, comes from your own experience. And I know that you didn't write this book to sort of bash schools necessarily, but you're the son of college educated parents. You hated conventional schools. And in fact, you dropped out of high school at the age of 16. And you wrote in the Outside Magazine piece that you published last November, the windows at your school, for all their transparency, felt like the bars of a prison cell.
Mm-hmm.
That's quite a line. What was it about your schooling experience that made you feel that way?
Well, let's just, you know, there's actually a gentleman named Peter Gray who actually works and lives here in Boston, who's done a lot of writing on the subject of children and school and free play. And actually, he was sort of the one who sort of introduced me to the idea that.
So can I read a quote from him?
Because it came
from
your article. Yeah,
so here's an article from a quote from Peter Gray. Children are forced to attend school where they are stripped of most of their rights. The debate shouldn't be about whether school is prison, because unless you want to change the definition of prison, it is. School deliberately removes the environmental conditions that foster self-directed learning and natural curiosity. It is like locking a child in a closet. And we should say Peter Gray is a Boston College psychology professor who wrote in 2013 a book called Free to Learn, right?
Correct. Yeah. And I suppose I wouldn't go quite as far as Peter goes and say that school is, you know, ubiquitously the same as for every child as locking that child in a closet. I do believe that for a high percentage of school-going children, I think they experienced that same sense that I felt of, you know, sort of my time not belonging to me, of being sort of force-fed, being told what I must learn, how I must learn it, and when I must learn it, and feeling incredibly, you know, powerless as a result. So that's one of the things that I really remember, you know, and even sitting here talking about it, you know, I can sort of feel that emotion like rising in me, that sense of just, you know, absolute frustration, which then sort of, you know, boiled over into sort of anger and rebellion in my case. You know, a lot of kids are able, you know, so I think some kids can actually survive and thrive in that environment. But I've talked to an awful lot of adults, and I would even go so far as to say the majority of the adults that I've spoken with, you know, do not recall their school-going days favorably.
You know, I know this is a question that you must get again and again and again, but I'm going to ask it anyway. You know, you went to school, had the option to go to school, made the choice not to go to school. You're not giving your kids the choice of going to school.
Oh, my kids could go to school if they really wanted to.
Oh, they could.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I think this is sometimes another misperception of what, you know, that we're sort of living this isolationist life where our children are under lock and key. And, you know, they have no interest. They have absolutely no interest. Part of the reason that they have no interest is that my wife and I go to tremendous effort to facilitate opportunities for them that, you know, actually make school to them pale in comparison. You know, and that's another sort of misconception I hear a lot, which is that this is sort of the lazy parents' version of education. That is emphatically not.
No, you know, I believe that. I'm sure there are great questions. I think we'll get some from listeners. I'm sure there's some great questions that are worth posing to you about this. But one thing I'm certain that it's not the lazy thing to do.
Well, I will say that, you know, when I talk about unschooling or immersion learning or whatever you want to call it. I'm talking about our version of
it.
You know, and one of the things I think that's so great about this model of education is that it can be a million different things to a million different families.
Yeah.
So I'm talking about what it is for us. Now, that's the antithesis of a standardized, compulsory education that is really one thing to a million different families.
Well, let's take a couple of calls. We're talking to Ben Hewitt. He's author of Homegrown: Adventures in Parenting Off the Beaten Path, Unschooling and Reconnecting with a Natural World. Let's go to Simon, who's calling from Cambridge. Hi, Simon. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I'm a public school teacher in Cambridge Public Schools. I'm actually a music teacher, a string instrument teacher. And I have an enormous amount of admiration for what you're doing with your children. I think it does take a lot of confidence, a lot of effort. And I suppose my real question is, if you feel like your kids have the same opportunities as other kids in the country who have had a more traditional schooling, whilst I agree you're prepared to put in the same amount of effort, if not more, than regular school teachers, how do you get the intellectual and educational confidence, and what could you say to people wanting to follow your path, that you have the kind of capacity to teach such a broad spectrum of subjects that is necessary for your kids to achieve?
Sure, Simon, thanks for putting that on the table. Ben, please.
Yeah, well, I guess, a couple things. And I want to talk a little more broadly about this whole subject of opportunity, because I hear that language a lot. You know, aren't you concerned about, for instance, this is not exactly what he's asking or what Simon is asking, although, again, I think he's sort of asking a version of this. Are you not concerned about the opportunities, or are your children not, being exposed to certain opportunities by not being in school? You know, the only honest answer to that is, of course, that's the case. Just as those children who are in school are not being exposed to certain opportunities that my children have, every parent anywhere in the world can never expose their children to every opportunity the world has to offer them. We live in a really incredibly rich and diverse world with all sorts of amazing things to see and do and hear and experience. In terms of the diversity of subjects, one of the things and one of the very reasons that we sort of choose this style of education is because we actually believe that it exposes our children to a much broader range of subject matter. And more importantly, it does it in a way that feels very tangible to them. And one of the things that I remember so well about my school truncated, public education experience is how abstract so much of the information and learning and knowledge, or whatever you want to call it, subject matter felt to me. In the real world, subjects are not divided into 40-minute blocks, where the bell rings and you run from math to English to science. In the real world, these things are commingling all the time all around us. In some ways, I struggle to talk about my children's learning in the context of subjects, because it just doesn't look like that. And yet those subjects are in their lives every minute of their lives, if that makes any sense.
No, it does. You write so well in this book, and I just want to read one thing that you write. You write, "This is the dream I can't kick, although I sometimes wonder if it's not a selfish one. My boys will not chase the infinite possibilities of the world at large, but wherever they may be, they will instead continue to find fulfillment in the world at hand." I like that almost as a sort of Zen statement. But here's the question that poses in my mind, especially when I hear they will not chase the infinite possibilities of the world. I mean, say your boys are cut out to be, an astrophysicist or an astronaut or something that really does require, kind of regimented by the book learning and institutional access and all of that. Will they get there if that's what they're cut out to be?
I fully believe that if that's what they're cut out to be and that's what they want to be, they will 100% get there. And one thing that did not make it into the book, but that I experienced over the course of writing the book and also reporting the article I wrote for Outside Magazine, was that I actually interviewed a fairly broad array of adults who had been unschooled.
Yeah.
And one thing that I found fascinating, I actually struggled to find one who hadn't gone on to college. I think I interviewed 14 in total, and of those 14, 13 had gone on to higher education. And their experiences talking about that, every one of them was grateful for the experience. every one of them felt also that it had given them an advantage as they chose to pursue that higher education, because by at that point in their life, they had really found they had found a self-directed path. They knew what they wanted. They knew what they were going to college or university to get. And they were prepared to work really hard to get it.
Let's take another. Sorry, but I want to get we've got a bunch of people who want to get in on this conversation. So let's go to Mike, who's calling from Hudson, New Hampshire. Hi, Mike. You're on the air. Mike, are you with us? All right. I think we've lost Mike. How about Haley from Medford? Let's go to Haley.
Hi.
Hi. You're on the air, Haley.
Hi. I'm actually wondering how it was that you came to take this decision upon yourself. You mentioned talking to a couple of people, but I went through school, loved it, but always was reading under my desk. My little brother, who's very smart, hated school, didn't do well, but is now in college, and he really would have benefited from that kind of unschooling program, I think. So I'm sort of curious how that happened
So how Ben and his wife came to this decision?
Yes.
Yeah. Thanks for that question. And it's I mean, certainly there are, you know, the roots of it are, you know, sort of embedded in my own experience with the public education system, and also to a certain extent with my wife. So she went a little bit farther down that sort of presumed, you know, middle class educational journey, where she actually went on to college and actually left the RIT one semester shy of a degree, much to the consternation of her parents, I'm sure. But so we both, you know, sort of had, you know, a little bit of a jaundiced view of more structured formal education. And then when I was in my early 20s, I had the really good fortune to rent a room in a house that was the primary tenant was a single father who had two children who at the time I think were about 5 and 7 or maybe 6 and 8, both boys. And he was following a path that was, you know, looked to me in hindsight largely like unschooling, although I'd never heard of the term at that point. But I was just so struck by those children who were some of the most sort of, you know, joyful and energetic and actually, you know, interestingly, well socialized children that I had ever met, and resourceful, just amazingly resourceful. And that was sort of my first exposure. And then when Penny, my now wife, then girlfriend, came to visit me, you know, and she met those kids, you know, that was a real watershed moment for both of us.
Well, Ben Hewitt, it's such a pleasure talking to you about this. I want to just read one thing sort of toward the end of your book. You write, "Our son's unschooling has become our unschooling, and the freedom we have granted them to embrace learning is a freedom we have granted ourselves." So that's it's another line of questioning that we don't have time to get into, but I just wanted to sort of leave that thought there, this idea that you make a case that unschooling benefited your sons. It's also benefited you and your wife in a big way.
You know, we're really the ones who needed to be unschooled. Our children didn't need it.
Well,
we needed it.
That's Ben Hewitt. He's the author of Homegrown, Adventures in Parenting, Off the Beaten Path, Unschooling, and Reconnecting with a Natural World. He'll be discussing his book tonight at 7 at Brookline Booksmith. Ben, thanks so much for
coming.
Thank
you, Anthony.
And listeners, stay with us. A lot more coming up. I'm Anthony Brooks with Sasha Pfeiffer. This is Radio Boston.